Hello everyone, welcome to the 12th episode of the AJSP Editors Podcast. This is Kim Pontem, and we have two more hosts here, Angela Leung and Sammy Khan. For those of you who are new to the podcast, we started this podcast in 2021. We're now in the third year. We have two objectives in this series. First of all, to introduce publications in the journal to the global psychology and social psychology community. Second, to nurture the next generation of Asian social psychologists. In each episode, we have two sections. The first section is editor's pick, and the second is special topic discussion. So without further delay, so let's begin with our editor's pick. So this time, Sammy picked a paper which, again, Angela, Sammy, and I all agree that this is a great paper. We really want to discuss it. So I'll pass the time to Sammy to kind of summarize the paper for us. And then after that, we'll discuss the strengths of the paper, discussions also about suggestions for improvements, etc. Sammy.
Thank you, Kevin. So the paper that I've chosen to talk about in today's podcast is entitled Worldviews About Change, Their Structure and Their Implications for Understanding Responses to Sustainability, Technology, and Political Changes. The paper is authored by Paul Bain and colleagues. It's a large international team that has authored this paper. So the paper reports findings from an ambitious research undertaking, which represents years of work. We are really pleased that the researchers chose to publish this in the AJSP, and I think it will be difficult to do the research justice in the context of just this podcast, but I'll do my best. As the title suggests, the research examined worldviews. Colloquially speaking, worldviews are arguably broadly used. So before we start off, I think it's important to define what the authors mean when they state worldviews about change. In the paper, the authors defined worldviews as an umbrella term that describes a general understanding or orientation used as a broad frame or lens to make sense of experience. This may include both descriptive and prescriptive elements. Worldviews about change then can be thought of as future trajectories. Humans lay beliefs about the ways in which the world will evolve or change. Their background research is very elaborate and draws on multidisciplinary literature and identifies five distinct worldviews. The first worldview is progress, representing improvement over time. The second worldview is golden age, indicating decline from an idyllic past. The third one is the endless cycle, indicating continual fluctuations between alternate states without any overall change. Balance represents homeostatic process, wherein systems react to shocks and extremes in ways that keep the system in a balanced state. And then finally, maintenance. The world is what it is, and it won't necessarily change. So the research interrogates these five worldviews in five studies with a total sample size of almost 5,000 participants. I'll talk about all the studies very briefly, but I'll provide an overview of the five studies first. The first study established initial items of the five worldviews and then examined their associations with demographic variables, policies, and behavior regarding sustainability. The second study further refines the measure of the five worldviews. The third study examines associations of the five worldviews with technological innovations, specifically social robots and in vitro meat. The fourth study examines how the five worldviews were associated with voting preferences in the US and the UK. And the fifth study was a cross-cultural study set in 10 countries representing five continents that examined associations between worldviews about change and the responses to sustainability. So as you can hear from just this overview, it's a very ambitious research undertaking. But turning to the first study, the aim here was to develop and validate measures of the five worldviews about change. And to this end, an initial pool of items, 31 items, were developed, with 47 items assessing the respective worldviews. For the first study, data was collected from just over 1,000 US participants. And the idea here was to divide that data into two subsamples. The reason for this is that it would allow the research to run exploratory factor analysis with the first subsample and then confirmatory factor analysis with the second subsample. In addition to the 31 items assessing the five worldviews, several measures capturing responses to sustainability-related issues were included in the study. For example, this included pro-environmental intentions, human utilization of nature, attitudes towards reducing population growth, and attitudes towards corporate social responsibility. Demographics, including age, gender, education level, and political orientation, were also recorded. Turning to the findings, overall, both the EFA and CFA, the exploratory and confirmatory factor analysis, converged well. with the exclusion of some items based on preset criteria, such as factor loadings, cross loadings, and retention of a minimum number of items per factor, resulting in a final set of 22 items. The strongest association found between the five worldviews about change and the demographic variables was that between the Golden Age worldview, the view that the world is in decline, and political orientation, and that those that were politically conservative were more likely to endorse the Golden Age worldview, and of course, vice versa. Regarding the associations between the worldviews and the responses to sustainability, correlation and regression analysis show that balanced worldviews had the strongest association with sustainability responses. This included, for example, positive associations with pro-environmental intentions and corporate responsibility, and negative associations with human utilization of nature. Those were the main findings, but there are more findings in the paper that I would encourage listeners to read through and get a better grasp of. The second study had a focus of refining the measures of the five worldviews. What the authors wanted to do was to develop reliable four-item measures for each of the five worldviews. So they ended up with 22 items in the first study, but they wanted a measure consisting of 20 items in the second study, with four items assessing each of the worldviews. And in this one, they also included measures to assess the convergent and discriminant validity of the five worldview dimensions. Here specifically, they focused on values as well as life satisfaction and flourishing. It's also important here to mention that the second study was pre-registered, with data again being collected from the US. The confirmatory factor analysis in this study also yielded a good fit to the data, and the reliability of the subscales, those five worldview dimensions, improved overall, with only one scale, that scale assessing maintenance worldviews, having an alpha somewhat below unacceptable threshold. And another aspect of the research here that I think is important to mention is that the authors or the researchers run confirmatory factor analysis on all worldview items in all the subsequent three studies. And in these three studies, the analysis showed a good fit to the data. With regard to the associations between the worldviews and the value dimensions, findings showed that the progress worldview was more strongly associated with values expressing openness to change and self-outcomes, such as achievement. The Golden Age and maintenance worldviews were more strongly associated with the conservation values, and the maintenance worldview was also associated with self-enhancement values, particularly power. The balance worldview was more strongly associated with self-transcendence values, such as universalism and benevolence, and the endless cycle worldview was not associated with any value dimensions. Finally, for someone like myself that studies associations between large-scale identities, ideologies, and well-being, I found the associations between the worldviews and well-being particularly interesting. And results from these analyses showed that the progress and balance worldviews about change have the strongest associations with well-being. So those that espouse progress and balance worldviews also experience greater levels of well-being. Having refined the instrument assessing worldviews, the third study considered the relationship between worldviews about change and technological innovations. And the focus here was on social robots and in vitro meat, respectively. Social robots then refer to robots that, for example, can be utilized in healthcare treatment and as social support for aging populations, whereas in vitro meat refers to meat that is lab grown from cells taken from animals. And these two innovations can often be contentious in public debates and discourses. Two samples were utilized here, consisting of around 300 US participants per study. And the general trends in the data based on correlation and regression analysis, controlling for demographics and values, show that those with progress worldviews show the strongest intentions to support the adoption of social robots and in vitro meat, while those with a Golden Age worldview, but also to some extent maintenance worldview, show the greatest intention to oppose these technological innovations. The patterns of association for the endless cycle worldview were the most mixed and thereby difficult to interpret, and no associations could be observed for the balance worldview. So in summary here, those with a Golden Age worldview, but also maintenance worldview, were opposed to these innovations, whereas those with a progress worldview were in support of these technological innovations. The fourth study is set in political arenas and consisted of two samples, one from the US and one from the UK. More specifically, the study examined how the five worldviews about change predicted voting preferences in the two countries. In the context of the US, participants were asked to indicate the extent to which they supported the Democrats and the Republicans. And in the UK context, participants were asked to indicate the extent to which they supported the Labour Party versus the Conservative Party. It's also important here that the data was collected 1 week before the general election in the US in 2016, and then 5 days before the general election in the UK in 2019. So these studies were situated while an election was ongoing in the two national contexts. Importantly, a range of control variables were also included in the study, and this included system justification beliefs, social dominance orientation, political identification, income ethnicity, and whether participants lived in a rural or urban area, and their religiosity. So the most clear-cut finding from this study regarding worldviews was that the Golden Age worldview, the worldview that the world is in decline, predicted support for the Republican Party, or arguably support for Trump, in the 2016 general election. However, the same finding couldn't be observed in the UK, in that the Golden Age worldview did not predict support for the Conservative Party. So what's important to keep in mind about the finding observed in the US with regard to the Golden Age worldview and a preference for the Republican Party and Trump is that that association was significant after controlling for system justification belief, social dominance orientation, and all the demographic variables that were recorded in the study. And these are variables that are generally found to be associated with support for conservative ideologies and political parties. So it's a very novel finding in that way. Finally, then, the fifth study set out to validate five worldviews cross-culturally with samples collected in 10 countries or societies, and this included Australia, Chile, China and Taiwan, India, Japan, Peru, Russia, Spain, and the US. One of the aims of the study was to assess if metric invariance could be supported cross-culturally, but also then observe if and how worldviews predicted responses to sustainability across cultures. Responses to sustainability were conceptualized, operationalized, and measured in terms of pro-environmental intentions, corporate social responsibility, and neoliberal attitudes. So that's in a similar way to the first study. Findings supported metric invariance for the five worldviews across the 10 countries. This indicated that the five worldviews about change are understood in similarly coherent ways across cultures. But given that scalar invariance couldn't be observed, country and or regional means weren't directly comparable. However, overall, the balanced worldview of change was endorsed to the greatest extent in most countries, with only one exception. This was closely followed by the progress worldview about change. Other than these patterns of findings, the US, Spain, Peru, and Chile place greater emphasis on the Golden Age worldview, believing that the world is in decline. And contrary to predictions, countries in Asia didn't place greater emphasis on the endless cycle worldview. And another interesting finding was that India and Russia almost placed the same emphasis on progress and balance worldviews. Associations with responses to sustainability varied widely between countries, but all worldviews were positively associated with pro-environmental intentions. Progress and balance worldviews show the strongest positive association with issues involving social responsibilities of businesses. On the other hand, the view that businesses shouldn't make donations was the strongest among those endorsing Golden Age, endless cycle, and maintenance worldviews. So that's really a summary of the five studies. And in terms of implications, on the one hand, authors outline the contributions of the research. And on the other hand, it discusses various possible extensions and improvements to the research. So the reasons for why I picked this paper is because it reports an exceptional program of research. The research is both novel and rigorous. It really made me think on many levels, inspiring new ideas and new ways of thinking. And I think this is in part because the formulation of the research questions drew on multidisciplinary literature, which provides a certain richness to the conceptualization and operationalization of the research. And the attention to detail in the methodologies and analysis are really impressive. And it made me appreciate the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into conducting good research and the dedication it takes to drive a program of research forward. So any early career scholars, but also more senior scholars, should really read this paper to become inspired about how one could and should go upon designing a program of research. So that's my take on the paper. I hope I could do it some justice, but it is really a paper to be read, and there are many things there to pick up on. But I will pass it on to Kevin first to outline his view of the paper and its particular strengths.
Thank you, Sammy, for all the effort in summarizing the paper. It's really, really a big job. There's a lot of content in this paper, and while I can't agree with Sammy more, I really think that researchers, early career researchers particularly, should spend some time reading this paper, not only to learn about the theories or the methods, but in terms of how the program of research is planned and conducted and how it can be presented, right? This is really a kind of a model kind of that we can refer to. Regarding the things that I like in the paper, I think Sammy mentioned quite a lot of them already. I'm particularly interested in last study, the study five, given that it is a multinational study. That's always something that I like. I think, at this point, most of us know the importance of establishing cross-national or cross-cultural validity theories and research findings. And it is important to not to rely only participants from a single country. And obviously not to assume that what you find in a single sample or samples from a single country is necessarily generalizable to other populations. So it's something that to be demonstrated empirically. And so I really like that these authors, they took the effort into running and conducting this last study, study five, with 10 countries, which allowed them to establish the generality of the construct and its measurements empirically. And also the data allowed them to explore any cross-national similarities or differences. And they use a meta-analytic approach to achieve that, which is really interesting. And they also established the measurement invariance of not only the key construct, the measure of the key construct, but also the other criteria variables that they used. So these are some of the things that I really encourage authors to think about. Well, obviously we handle a lot of submissions in a year, and Angela, Sammy and I together, we receive quite a lot of submissions with sometimes a single study, sometimes with maybe multiple studies, but still from a single country or single population. So I really want to take this advantage with reference to this paper to encourage authors to think about how to validate their research ideas with cross-national data, multinational data. And then this paper provides an example of some good practices that they can adopt. So that's something I really like. Of course, not to mention the very tight theorization and then the effort the authors put into the methods, the procedures, etc. These things I like, but I particularly want to pick up this cross-national, multinational thing in study five. That's something I really encourage authors to think about. Yeah, so that's my view. Yeah. How about Angela?
Hey, thanks, Sammy and Kevin. Also, thanks, Sammy, for picking this very nice paper for discussion. I think the paper really presents a very coherent package to showcase the different steps of how researchers can go about generating newly developed scale. So the paper does not just stop at showing us this new scale, but also going beyond that, such as showing us the step of how to make refinements to the scale items, to demonstrating the predictive validity of the scale for understanding people's responses, different things such as how they react to innovations, whether they support sustainability, and also even voting for Trump in the 2016 US election. And then finally, as Kevin just mentioned, they also established measurement invariance and also generalizability of the scale across 10 countries or regions. So I think it's really a complete package showing us the scale and then the implications and the utility of the scale. So I really liked that aspect of the paper. I also like the paper offers a very nice discussion comparing and contrasting change worldviews with other related social psychological constructs. For example, they talk about how change worldviews are related to political orientation, values, and dialectical and holistic thinking. Related to this point, they also did study two to establish discriminant validity of change worldviews with other individual difference measures, including personality, values, life satisfaction, and affect. So all these discussions and statistical evidence informed us about what the construct of change worldviews is and what it is not. Although this is the really very first paper examining people's lay understanding of change worldviews and establishing a psychometric measurement on assessing the five basic structures on lay people's understanding of the trajectories of change, I feel that after reading this paper, I already gained a very nuanced understanding of change worldviews. So this paper did a very good job giving us the foundation to understand the construct of change worldviews. So I can see myself using this scale in my own research when I study culture, creativity, or climate change in the future. I also foresee that this paper will be very well cited. That's why, as Sammy mentioned, we as the editors are very pleased to see this paper being published in AJSP.
Thank you, Kevin and Angela. And I think as readers probably can pick up from our enthusiasm around this paper is that we are all really quite impressed by the program of research. Do you think in the paper, in the discussion, the authors provide quite concrete suggestions for future research and how potentially it could be improved? So I don't really have that much to say with regard to that. I think if there's anything that I would add is that perhaps a person-centered approach as opposed to a variable-centered approach could be opted for in a future study. So to examine whether or not participants cluster into one versus another profile, or in other words, are there people that are more likely to espouse one worldview over the other? So rather than then examining associations, one could look at differences between categories of people. Another possible suggestion for future research is, and this is also raised by the authors themselves in the discussion, would be the manipulation of the worldviews in experimental design to be able to infer causality. Finally, I think thinking broader, it made me think of ways in which we perhaps may want to consider lay beliefs about the nature of humankind. For example, do people believe that people are inherently good or bad, or altruistic versus selfish? Can people change or evolve in particular ways? So how perhaps lay beliefs about the inherent nature of humankind, how their implications for, of course, a range of different interpersonal and intergroup outcomes. I think social psychological research often touches upon this, the nature of humankind, in different research strands. But I personally haven't come across any research that explicates it in that kind of way. So those were my thoughts. But again, I must reiterate, I am so impressed with this research. So whatever I have to suggest is just going to be quite minor in relation to what already is presented in the research. I'll to Angela, and perhaps you may want to raise some thoughts about future research or suggestions for improvement.
Yeah. So my comments are less about improvements, because we all agree that this paper is already a very comprehensive paper. So my comments are more about future directions. So I think that the paper can really inspire many directions for future research. And I can think of at least three potential areas. So I want to share with the audience maybe some potential future directions. So first, I think we can examine the potential antecedents for the five basic worldviews about change. For example, are there early childhood experiences or family upbringing or socialization experiences, or maybe cultural values or traditions that can result in a higher tendency to endorse a particular lay belief in the change trajectory? So I think that is one potential area for future research, to understand what is the antecedent to the development of certain lay belief of change. Second, I think we can identify situations where the belief in a specific change trajectory is the most desirable in promoting adaptive human behaviors in solving societal challenges. For instance, the current paper already showed some evidence that the balanced worldview was most consistently associated with support for sustainability, whereas the progress worldview showed stronger intentions to support the adoption of innovations into society. And we know that the support for sustainable development and the use of innovative technologies are key to tackling global challenges like climate change and food shortage. Therefore, the balance and progress worldviews may facilitate more adaptive behaviors or strategies for solving pressing issues. So it would be very interesting to see how the change worldviews can motivate or facilitate some adaptive behaviors for solving all these global challenges. Third, I would be very interested to find out how the basic change worldviews are related to the adoption of AI or views toward the fast growth of ChatGPT or other generative AI systems in our everyday life. For example, I will be intrigued to find out whether the progress worldview will still show strong support for the rapid development of AI, given its enormous impacts on human life. On the other hand, would the balance worldview, similar to the golden age and maintenance worldviews, in turn show opposition to AI development? It is because to me, the balance worldview is about advocating a right balance between humanity and technology. So it may be reasonable to predict that people with the balanced worldview may be more hesitant towards or even more resistant against AI development. So I think given AI and ChatGPT being a very influential development in the present days, so I think it would be very interesting to see how the change worldviews are related to people's attitudes to these generative AI systems. So I think these are some areas I think would be very interesting for future research to explore. So Kevin, do you have other suggestions or improvements that you can discuss with us?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Angela and Sammy, for sharing your view potential direction. Future research, I agree with their points. And I just want to add two more points here. The first one here, I want to see more attention to the potential role of contextual factors in people's beliefs in the various change worldviews. For instance, I'm quite interested in finding out to what extent these change worldviews are dependent on the predominant religious belief, literacy level, or socio-political development of a country. Do Christians, Muslims, Buddhists have different change worldviews? Does history of communism, democratization, or experience of wars matter in how people see the world? I think these questions are really interesting, and answering these questions will allow us to understand how change worldviews develop and or how they are grounded in the social cultural context. And I think finding answers to these questions probably will require more systematic sampling of countries when conducting future research. So that's my first point. The second point here, perhaps connected to Angela's point about experimental manipulation, is whether the experience of major world events, global events in recent years, such as COVID pandemic, or wars between countries, or climate change, etc., has any impact on people's change worldviews. So I'm really curious whether increasing the salience of the COVID-19 pandemic or wars, for example, in people's attention would lead them to believe more strongly in, say, the endless cycle worldview. Because seemingly wars, pandemics are just happen again and again throughout human history. And people are talking about the next like already, which we don't know when it will happen, quite sure it will happen. So the experience of these global events, particularly those in recent years, to what extent they would influence how people think about the change of the world. So another thing I'm quite interested in learning more from the authors, or it could be anyone interested in this line of research. All right, so that ends our discussion of the first part of the episode, the editor's pick. Once again, I want to thank Sammy for picking this paper and summarizing the key points. So I want to encourage you to read this paper and, of course, the other papers published in the last issue. We'll come back with a special topic discussion. Okay, welcome back to the second part of the episode today, special topic discussion. Now, the special topic discussion today will be quite different from what we did previously. The reason is that actually this episode is the very last one of our team. The three of us, Angela, Sammy, and I, our team started at the beginning of 2021, and now 3 years have passed, and our term as the editors-in-chief of the journal will end at the very end of this year, and we have the new team taking over. So the special topic discussion today will be kind of like a reflection among ourselves about our experience, also about our views of the journal. We have done quite a lot of this, in my view, in the past 3 years with the journal. We have, for example, revised our editorial policies, particularly primarily introducing open science elements into it. We've started these podcast series. And then in 2021, which was the 25th anniversary of the journal, we organized a series of events to celebrate the anniversary. We published quite a lot of papers, obviously. We also published several special issues and also a special forum on COVID-19 and among many other events. So these are what we have done in the past 3 years. So now approaching the end, I think it's a really good timing for some reflections. Hopefully the readers and audience will also find something useful in this sharing with respect to their understanding of the journal or understanding of the role of an editor. I have a few questions. Okay. So I would just throw the questions one by one, and then Sammy, Angela, and I would each comment on that. The first question, the first issue I really want to discuss is the growth and development of our journal in the past 3 years. Have you seen any significant changes or improvements of the journal? So what are some notable trends or developments that have impacted the journal during this time? And maybe you can also name main challenges, et cetera, faced by the journal in the past 3 years. So yeah, maybe Angela, do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, maybe before I kind of share my observations, a bit of my history with AJSP.
Yeah, sure.
Because when I think about like changes and developments I saw in AJSP, I also thought about when I started working together with AJSP's editorial team. So I've been working with the team for the past 10 years. I was associate editor for AJSP from 2014. And then in 2018, with the invitation by Professor Alan Berlando, at the time, he was the editor-in-chief. I started my first three-year term as the co-editor with him. Then in 2020, Kevin invited me to stay for another three-year term. So now comes almost the end of 6 years serving as the co-editor for AJSP and 10 years, if I also count the time when I was the associate editor. So I think I'm somewhat qualified to reflect on the changes, elements of the journal. So I think one very notable change of the journal is that it has been receiving more submissions with pre-registered studies and open access datasets and research materials. So I think this is a very encouraging direction towards achieving open science. I also find the papers published in the journal to be of higher quality. Papers have reported more studies, which means the evidence supporting the study phenomenon is stronger and the findings are more robust and reliable. And of course, objectively, we see an upward trend of AJSP's impact factor, which has reached 2.4 this year. So in fact, the impact factor has been consistently increasing in the last few years. I think one challenge by the journal, which may also apply to other journals, could be that sometimes the review process has been delayed due to difficulty of securing reviewers. So I totally understand it is not always easy to spend a few good hours' time to review a paper and write a response letter despite the busy schedule. So I also want to take this opportunity to thank all the reviewers who have contributed their professional service to AJSP. Okay, so I think I pass the time to Sammy to see whether he has any other observations.
Thank you, Angela. I agree with Angela's assessment, and I've also been involved in the journal as editorial assistant. So I used to be screening papers under James Liu's leadership, and then I joined as an associate editor, and then finally now as a co-editor-in-chief. It gives you slightly different perspectives. I think the thing that I'm most proud of is this editorial team's, this is us, but also the associate editors, stare towards greater rigor in the papers that we publish. And I think this is a trend across this field of social psychology, but I'm really proud that we have actively engaged with it and with the open science agenda. And I do think even though we do this podcast and it is a service to the journal and to the AASP community, every time we look at the listener statistics and how many people listen to particular episodes, it's quite impressive that we have that reach. For me, at least, I'm really proud of engaging in that work, which is in line with the mission of the AASP, because we are reaching our target groups and they are actively listening. And we are also actively trying to be as pedagogical as possible in communicating research trends and communicating the specifics of research and giving advice. So I'm very happy to have been part of that and to be able to serve the mission of the AASP at one of the higher levels. That I think it is, as Angela says, a lot of the journal runs on the goodwill of people. It's on the goodwill of us. It's on the goodwill of the associate editors. It's on the goodwill of the editorial consultants. It's based on the goodwill of the reviewers, that without the input of the community, the AASP community, but also the social psychology community at large, we wouldn't be able to run this agenda. So I'm really thankful of everyone's time and effort into making this work, because without a particular reviewer, without a particular consultant, without a particular associate editor, we wouldn't be able to process a particular paper. So it takes a lot of effort from a lot of people. And I'm really thankful for that. I'm quite impressed of how we come together around this shared identity and shared objective and make things happen. And I think make a positive contribution to the social psychology community at large, but the Asian social psychology community in particular.
Thanks, Angela and Sammy. They're sharing very nicely, which of course I agree with everything they said. Personally, I, just like Angela and Sammy, I have been associated with the journal or association for some years. I'm really happy to see quite a number of positive changes over time. And obviously these changes come from the efforts of the previous teams. And when we took over, when we started, we tried to build up on what the previous teams have already established, reinforce what they have done. And at the same time, also starting something new. The journal has witnessed quite a number of significant developments over the past several years. Angela and Sammy already mentioned quite a number of them. I just want to highlight two of them here. The first one is that we receive more and more papers nowadays. The number of submissions received has been increasing quite drastically in the past several years. And I think that shows that the journal is becoming a more and more attractive outlet in the eyes of authors. And that, of course, is great news for the journal. The second observation I have is that the editorial team itself has also been expanding. We now have a bigger team of associate editors and editorial board members than we started 3 years ago. And the commitment and goodwill of these associate editors and editorial board members is an asset of the journal. And it happens that we are able to engage more and more peers in our field to join us, to work together with us, to contribute to the development of the journal. And that is really amazing. But there are challenges, of course, faced by the journal currently and probably in the near future. And I think the biggest challenge is how to continue attract submissions. As you may know, academic publishing is getting more and more competitive every single year and new journals being introduced. So how can the journal, the Asian Journal of Social Psychology, continue to attract submissions and continue to develop? That's a challenge the journal is facing. That again will require the efforts and insights of people already in the editorial board and insights and contributions by the new editorial team. Now, talking about the development of the journal, maybe we can talk about a little bit, not only about the past, but also future. We're passing now to the editorship to the new team, but I'm just curious what we think about the future development of the journal. If you have any suggestions, what you would like to see more in the journal, or what else can the journal do, or what can the new team do in terms of fostering the growth of the journals? Any suggestions or any thoughts on that? Maybe Angela first.
Yeah, so one thing I want to see more in the journal, maybe for future or prospective authors to consider, is to have more research collaborations across different countries or cultures. Because I think from my handling of the manuscripts in AJSP, it's very common to see papers authored by researchers from the same country or even from the same institution. So I would hope to see more cross-border collaborations, because I think these cross-cultural, cross-border collaborations will provide more new insights on the research topic and also inspire the exploration of understudied phenomenon. Another thing, maybe the next team of editors can consider, is to encourage the publication of more special issues that can apply social psychological concepts and theories to understand social issues or pressing issues. For example, we have some very well-cited special issues on the social psychology of climate change and social class in recent years. So it would be very nice to see even more special issues published in AJSP on interesting and timely social psychological topics. So Sammy, do you have other thoughts about the future development of the journal for the next team or maybe for prospective authors?
I, in principle, agree with the points that you made. From my perspective, it is just doing more of what we're already doing, because I think we are also, as an association, Asian Association, working very actively with capacity building. So it's bottom-up, top-down approaches. And ultimately, it is about creating a research capacity within the Asian social psychology community. My wish is for the community, the association and the journal never to lose steam, to keep up the good fight and engage with the discipline as a whole, but also to innovate. And I know that sounds very arbitrary, but it is, I think, what we are doing and have been doing since the foundation of the association. If there's anything concrete, other than special issues, is that I would also like to see authors and researchers perhaps engage more with registered reports. We haven't received so many of them. So that will be something that we could see more of. That could be something that builds on what Angela's suggestions in terms of facilitating research collaborations around significant questions that actually people can come together and they don't have to necessarily do the research, but they can plan the research and then submit it to the journal. And then the association and the journal can think of ways of supporting those type of endeavors. And I think we already do that in many, many ways. It's not like we're not doing that, but I think it's perhaps thinking of ways and pushing that forward even further.
I agree with what Angela and Sammy said, but I want to add that we want to see more efforts in terms of demonstrating how we can leverage insights of social psychology to respond to all the different crises humanity is facing. Climate change, pandemics, economic inequality, wars and conflicts, you name it. I strongly believe that social psychology has a lot to contribute in terms of addressing or responding to these various crises. So I really hope to see more research directly addressing these crises, and particularly research that aim at making the impacts in a society, not only in the theoretical or conceptual level, but also, for example, empirically speaking, testing ideas in a real-world context, testing interventions, studying social change. I think we need this type of research in social psychology, I believe, could be play a big role in this. So this is another suggestion on top of what Angela and Sammy just said. Now, the very last question I have for all three of us, something more personal, right? As kind of concluding our term as editors of the journal. I'm just curious. I just want to know more from you in terms of, you know, what do you find to be the most rewarding thing as an editor of the journal over the past years? What are some of the memorable experiences or success stories that you have in the position as the journal's editors? And what are your personal gains? Or maybe sacrifices as well. So kind of what's your personal experience? We end with the kind of more emotional question here. Well, Angela?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. We can end the podcast with a bit more personal touch. So I think very rewarding aspect being an editor of AJSP is to see how the review process has helped improve a paper so that it can eventually pass all the hurdles and get published. I think it's very gratifying to receive a thank you email from authors whose paper was finally accepted after numerous rounds of reviews. And sometimes actually it's even more gratifying to receive a thank you email from authors whose paper was actually rejected by us. So despite rejection, some authors actually are very grateful for receiving feedbacks in the rejection letter, because these comments and feedbacks are really beneficial for them to kind of reappraise their research and also prepare the manuscript for their next submissions. These are very gratifying moments I had being the editor of AJSP. And personally, I think after experiencing the other side of the review process being the editor, I'm particularly thankful for the editors and reviewers who handled my own manuscripts. So I became more patient and understanding when the decision letter arrived later than expected, because I understand that sometimes it's not under the control. So yeah, I've become more understanding about that. And also when revising my own manuscript, I make sure to address every single comment, because I know at least three persons, one editor, two reviewers, taking the time out of the busy schedule to read my paper and give me comments without any pay. So I want to highlight that that is also a very rewarding aspect of being in the editor role. And of course, another personal gain is doing this editor's podcast, because I feel that I will be a lot more comfortable and more experienced doing something similar in the future. So it's an unexpected gain being the editor of AJSP. In terms of personal sacrifice, I would say it's the amount of time you need to put into the position, because you have to sometimes read 50 to 70 manuscripts in 1 month if you're handling the manuscripts for that particular month. So it can be very demanding. At times, I feel quite overwhelmed when you have to handle the manuscripts on top of your own teaching, your own research, your supervision of students, and also administrative duties. So I think it's the amount of time you have to put into reviewing the papers. But I can also see that this can be a personal gain, because I learn how to manage my time and also prioritize my tasks related to my work and family life. So I'm very grateful having this opportunity working with Kevin and Sammy for the past 3 years. So Sammy, you can maybe share with us your rewarding experiences being the editor.
Thank you, Angela. My view is very much in line with Angela's. And it is really seeing the end products and supporting associate editors. Because once you're in co-editor-in-chief, it's more about providing support to the associate editors in handling the manuscripts. It's a nice position to be in, to be able to follow a paper from screening it to then being the person that approves the acceptance of it. And you can just follow the reviews, read through, and you can just see all the time and effort. You see compare the first submission with the accepted version of it. And of course, I'm always very appreciative of the associate editors that put the time in, and the authors also that engage with the process. Really, I really enjoy being able to be very supportive of associate editors in the process and give them the time and advice that they require. And for me, rewarding as well is, not many people think of this, but I've been moving around a lot in the world, and now being situated in Sweden and Europe, I'm really truly honored to still be playing an important role in facilitating social psychology in Asia and globally, that I haven't lost that connection. So for me, sometimes I have to pinch myself that I've become welcomed in, and I'm still welcome in this community. And I really enjoy that. It really gives me something very deep on a personal and professional level. It's all about the people, and it's all about the mission. And I really learned a lot from working with the two of you, Angela and Kevin. And I remember when we had our first meeting, it wasn't the pandemic. The pandemic had just started, and we all knew that this was going to be a challenge. I really value our involvement as a team and how we work now. There's so many things we don't have to explicate to one another. We just understand how to get things done. I really take pride in our involvement as an editorial team. And I've learned a lot from the two of you, and I've learned a lot from the process in and of itself. And as Angela said, the main challenge is the time and effort, balancing up editorial work with all other responsibilities we have as teachers, administrators, researchers. We're also interconnected with many other activities or many other organization activities, and finding the time and effort. And the challenge is really to uphold a high standard at all junctures of the submission and peer review process, and everything additional that we do as editors as well, such as recording this podcast or participating in meetings and conferences, or even online meetings about other things. So it's about, I think, keeping your focus and remembering what the objective, what the mission is, and contribute in a way that upholds some standard.
Thank you, Angela and Sammy, for the sharing. For me personally, being the chief editor really requires a lot of commitment in terms of time and energy and effort. I can still remember the many late nights working on the manuscripts. That's only the time of the day that I use for handling manuscripts, and with at the same time being very busy with research, teaching, administrative work, etc. But I think the gains obviously outweigh the so-called sacrifice. I've gained a lot in the process, a lot of practical skills, obviously, like communicating with people, doing this podcast, for example, as Angela also mentioned, and learning more about editorial processes. These things are for a practical understanding of things that will be useful, I think, for me in the future. Another gain is the having the chance to get to know many, many people in the community. As I spend more time as an editor, I started to realize that academic publishing is about different parties working together. It's not just about authors writing good papers and then finding somewhere to publish it. It's about good researchers producing good research, and then conscientious editors handling the review process and committed reviewers spending time, of course, with no pay, right? Reading the papers, giving the best suggestions and comments they have. And of course, the publishers managing the whole process. So every paper that you see published in a journal, either our journal or whatever journal we talk about, is an output of this web or network of people behind. It's not just by the authors. And that changes my perspective about doing research as well. So of course, I do research, I publish papers, and I'm also an author, but at the same time, understand better now that I need support also from those people, editors who handle my manuscripts, reviewers who review my manuscripts. When I was young, I tend to see reviewers as obstacles, right? Of course, I now understand that this is not really true. Reviewers are here to help me, right, as an author, to produce the best version of my research as possible, and also the editor as well. And then, so this is the change of the perspective about what academic research and publishing is like. It is a collaborative project, actually, every single paper. And a collaboration not only by the authors, but also by the other parties involved. So this is perhaps the biggest gain for me as serving as the chief editor of the journal, is to getting to see up close how these things work. And in the process, I, of course, get to know many people. I've met new members in the editorial board, people I didn't know before, and then we work very closely with each other. I had the opportunity of meeting authors, associate editors in different occasions. Like, for example, the last summer when I attended the AASP conference, I had a chance to meet a lot of authors, and a lot of people came to me talking about their plans of submitting manuscripts to the journal, or talking about how much they appreciated the podcast series, etc. I really enjoyed the conversations with everyone of you, and all this happened because of the journal. And of course, Angela and Sammy, without you, all these things would have not been possible, obviously, right? I've learned a lot from you, both of you. And this is a great team. Somehow as a researcher, sometimes, I don't know if you share this feeling, but sometimes doing research is kind of a very solitary kind of work, right? Most of the time you're reading papers on your own, you're writing on your own. Maybe you have collaborators, but that's very different from teamwork, right? So this additive thing is really a teamwork. So I really enjoy that. And AJSP is where I published my very first paper. I have a very special sense of connectedness to it. And so exactly, it's my biggest honor to provide my service to it. And I think this chief editor experience is and will remain to be one of the most memorable experiences in my career. So let's just stop here without being overly emotional. So that ends our special topic discussion. A big thank you again to Angela and Sammy.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Yeah, I will always cherish this time together. They're working together on this AJSP editorial board as the co-editor-in-chief with you and Sammy.
Thank you, Kevin. You have really led us well, and I've really enjoyed working with you and with Angela. And I look forward to the next conference when we get to spend some time again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm really grateful to you too. And also want to thank our audience and also the readers of the journal for the support. So let's stop here. Bye-bye. No, this is the very last episode of our team, Angela, Sammy, and me. And of course, it's also the time for us to introduce to you the new editorial team. And very happy today they are with us. The new editorial team, we have our chief editor, Yu Nia, who is here today. And we also have Wendy Lee here. And some of you may remember she actually appeared in one of our podcast episodes, right? And another editor-in-chief, co-editor-in-chief here is Lucy. Lucy Lin is also here with us. Yeah. And she also appeared in one of our previous episodes. So this is a new team. Okay. You, Wendy, and Lucy. Now I will pass the time to them. Maybe they can introduce themselves a little bit. And of course, all three of them have been associated with the journal for some time already. So I pass the time for them to introduce themselves. Maybe you first.
Thank you, Kevin, for the nice introduction. Hello, everyone. My name is Ian from Hosei University in Tokyo. I am very excited to serve as editor-in-chief for AJSP starting January 2024. AJSP is the first conference I presented my research, and AJSP is the first journal I published a paper. So I really appreciated the nurturing approach AASB has. And now I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to pay this forward. So thank you. I'm going to pass this to Wendy, perhaps.
Hi, everyone. I'm Wendy Lee. I'm Associate Professor of Psychology and Associate Dean for Research in the College of Healthcare Sciences at the James Cook University, Australia. I am Associate Editor of AJSP and the Treasurer of SP. So I have a long history with the journal as well as AASP. And for me, I really want to support researchers to publish paper. For example, the interface between social psychology and health and mental health research. And so I hope I will fulfill the role. Well, thank you for your support.
And Lucy?
Hi, everyone. I'm Lucy Xiaowan Lin from University of Macau. I have been serving as an associate editor of AJSP for the past 5 years, a long time already. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to continue contributing to the advancement of AJSP in the new role.
You can tell our new editors, though, have been associated with the journal and also the association in some way for some time already. So they are taking over the team, the editors. So one question I have for them is about their vision. So the question, of course, is, you know, what is your vision for the journal? Under your leadership, how is it going to look like?
Yeah. So last month, Wendy, Lucy and I got together to discuss how we wanted AJSP to evolve in the next 3 years. And we had a lot of ideas, but I think in the end, we agreed on two major goals. So first, we'd like to increase the number of submissions and be able to attract more good papers so that we can maintain and even improve the current impact factor. A second goal is that we are committed to encouraging submissions from all parts of Asia and Asia Pacific to maintain the cultural diversity of the authors. ASP was created because Asian scholars found difficulties in getting the recognition they deserve in the mainstream, so-called Western psychology. And so I would like AJSP to continue recognizing the work of scholars from all parts of Asia Pacific. So these are our two main goals we have for the next 3 years.
Thanks for telling us the two goals of the new team. You, I'm quite sure Angela, Sammy, also agree these goals are really, really important. Maybe I can kind of follow up with a question about specific plans. How is the new team going to pursue these goals? What kind of specific actions you're going to take?
Yeah, so we'd like to continue publishing special issues regularly. Ideally, we're going to aim twice a year. And so if you are an established scholar and have ideas on the topics on special issues, we'd love to hear them. We'd also like to encourage translational research. And I was wondering whether Wendy could step in to explain a bit more about that.
Translational research focuses on producing more meaningful and applicable results that directly benefit human beings. So we would like to see more translational research paper published so that our findings not only focus on one area, but can be translated to other areas. And also, we would like to see authors emphasize the central role of theory in their qualitative research paper, because theory is always important for qualitative research paper, but of course, it's important for quantitative paper as well. But we would like to see that the focus and emphasize the central role of theory in the qualitative papers published in AJSP.
Great. Thank you, Wendy. We also want to encourage meta-analysis, papers on meta-analysis. And we're going to encourage authors to stick with the guidelines for systematic review and meta-analysis, for example, using Prisma checklist and so on, make it easier for you to submit meta-analysis as well. I am very committed in offering more educational opportunities to early career scholars. We hope to have some online workshops about ethics and the practice of open science, and also offer places where scholars from different countries can exchange research ideas, get feedback on their research ideas from more established scholars, find collaborators from various countries. And so I hope we can offer that kind of platform to our potential authors. We will continue with the podcast, and we are hoping to invite associate editors and the authors to share the highlights from their papers and, interestingly, share their behind-the-scenes anecdotes in conceiving and carrying out their research. We also had some ideas about acknowledging reviewers for their massive contribution in making this AJSP a great journal, and was hoping that Lucy could step in to explain about that idea.
Actually, as an academic journal, we all understand the crucial role that reviewers play in maintaining the quality and impact of the research we publish. So we plan to establish a new award at AJSP to recognize and appreciate the invaluable contributions of our esteemed reviewers. I think this award will recognize those individuals who consistently demonstrate exceptional dedication and expertise in their reviews. We believe that these awards will not only motivate them to continue their excellent work, but also inspire others to strive for excellence in their reviewing endeavors.
Thank you, Lucy. And so, you know, we're more open to more ideas. And so if you have any suggestions on how we could make this journal a better journal, we always want to welcome your feedback. But these are some of the plans we already have to start the next year.
Well, these are really fascinating ideas. I'm happy to hear all these plans, particularly impressed by your commitment to supporting authors and recognizing contributions of reviewers. Being an editor of a journal is more than just publishing papers. It's actually kind of managing a community or contributing to a community of people who produce research, people who read research, people who review research. It's a huge community out there that, you know, we are working with. So I'm really happy that you also recognize the dynamics of the between the journal and authors and reviewers, etc. So really look forward to your work. Thanks a lot, you, Wendy and Lucy, for joining us today. So to all our readers and audience, next time you hear this episode, it will be them, not me and Gender and Sammy anymore.
Kevin, but it's the time to really thank you for so many years of dedication to the journal. Kevin and Sam and Angela, without you, I don't think AJSP would have been any better. Really, thank you for so many years of contributions. And I believe all the listeners, I was me to really thank you as well.
Thanks a lot, you, for the kind words.
Also, another thing I would like to share is that you are still the current editors. The impact factor of the journal increased a lot. That's very amazing.
Yeah, thanks. That's really true. It has been increasing the past 2 years. Hopefully, that trend will continue. And yeah, then that, of course, requires efforts by everyone. So even though my team, you know, we are stepping down, we'll definitely continue to contribute and help the new team and our social psychology community in Asia. So we will still be around. Okay. All right. So thanks a lot, you, Wendy, Lucy, for joining us. And I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
And thank you, Angela, Sammy, for your support. Working closely with you two in the past 3 years, really very fruitful learning experience for me. I've learned a lot from you two.
Yeah, the same for me, Kevin. Yeah, I really learned a lot by working with you and Sammy for the past 3 years.
Likewise, it's been a really enjoyable experience.